Hello, everybody. Today is Monday, March 25th. I am Bill Murphy here with Chris Sports. And, of course, we'll do UConn men and women first, and then we'll do some other tournament scores, and then I have some baseball at the end. We will start with the UConn story. Donovan Clingan led UConn men to the Sweet 16 with a dominant performance and a 75-58 win over ninth seed Northwestern. Clingan landed the first punches as number one overall seed UConn knocked out number nine seed Northwestern in another NCAA tournament blowout. Clingan blocked a dunk attempt on the second defensive possession and continued to dominate the Wildcats, who were without injured seven-footer Matt Nicholson with a foot injury inside. He had a 12-point, 11-rebound double-double with five blocks at halftime and finished the game with 14 points, 14 rebounds, and eight blocks. "We all know what's at stake," said the 7'2" Bristol native, who's been on a tear. "If you want to win games and try to reach our ultimate goal, you've got to play the best defense you can." Tristan Newton recorded his 11th double-double of the season, 20 points and 10 assists, and Cam Spencer made four Huskies in double figures with 11, plus four rebounds, four assists, and three steals. Alex Carabon added 9 points and five rebounds. UConn, 33-3, will meet five-seed San Diego in a rematch of last year's national title game in the Sweet 16 on Thursday. It will be the Huskies' 19th appearance in the Sweet 16, where they are 12-6 all time. The game will tip off at 7:39 in Boston's TD Garden. The Huskies' defense smothered the Wildcats from the start on Sunday, clearly outmatched. Northwestern began the game 2-for-12 from the field and finished the first half just 8-for-31, 0-for-8 from deep. Hounding defense from Stephon Castle and Hassan Diarra held the Wildcats' leading scorer, Boo Buey, to just 2 points on 0-for-6 shooting in the first half, while their second leading scorer, Brooks Barnheiser, went into the break scoreless on an 0-for-8 shooting. "We knew Donovan would take the rim away. We wanted to chase those guys off the three-point line. We felt like the only way they could beat us today is if they made a lot of threes, those guys, if Boo was hitting sick, deep, Trey Young type of threes like he's made throughout his career," Coach Dan Hurley said. "So we blew everything up, got over everything. We're uber aggressive with our centers, and we are really just trying to funnel the ball to their five men. That was the game plan. I mean, we had DC behind us," Castle added, "so that gave me a lot of confidence to really guard the way I wanted to, and I feel like we did a great job on Bowie." Neither team made a three-pointer, 0-for-15 combined, until Spencer knocked one down from the wing with 3 minutes left in the first half, giving the Huskies a 33-14 lead. Carabon landed another with a minute left, and UConn went into the break up 40-18. "The threes weren't going, but we were scoring other ways. We were sharing the ball well, so everybody was feeling pretty confident," Spencer said. "And I think the defense led to our offense a lot tonight, which gives us that much more confidence." The Huskies scored 18 fast break points to Northwestern's 8. I'm going to stop there because we have so much other news to cover. And let me read more on UConn men. Stacy Castle was not happy with the lack of focus he saw on his son on February 6th, and he let him know about it. After back-to-back 20-point games, the first of his career, Stephon Castle took a step back against Butler. He missed a pair of open layups early and was scoreless at halftime, finishing with 5 points on 2-for-6 from the field. Over a month after the game, Stacy remembered the specific play that helped Butler get within five with less than 3 minutes left in Hartford. "One of the things immediately that I was on him about," Stacy said, "was he was standing there on the wing and he let Posh Alexander just zip a pass right by him to Pierre Brooks for a wide open three, and I just couldn't understand. That was a lack of focus. His dad ripped him," Coach Dan Hurley said, "didn't rip me. When you have that and you have his talent, things are going to go well." Castle finished that poor performance with 17 points on 8-for-18 shooting in a dominant win over Georgetown. He scored in double figures in seven of his next nine games and set a record for a weekly Big East honor, surpassing the likes of Carmelo Anthony and Allen Iverson as he coasted to the Big East Freshman of the Year trophy. Those post-game conversations with his dad, constructive criticism, Steph calls it, sometimes happens immediately after the game, but usually a bit later. It's what they've done for years. I don't think a lot of kids get told the truth enough in this sport, and that's one thing he was able to get, Stacey said. He was able to take some of the success, but know that he still needs to work on some things, so it's a great balance. I'm happy that he was able to take the message. Sometimes that's tough, too. You have kids, when you're telling them stuff, they don't always get the message. They only hear the tone. He's able to separate the two. Stacey Castle grew up in Queens, New York, and was a standout high school basketball player at Far Rockaway High before spending the year at the powerhouse prep school Oak Hill Academy, which has produced the likes of Jerry Stackhouse, Rajon Rondo, and Carmelo Anthony. He played AAU with Young, UConn's associate head coach, also from Queens, and started playing in college at Wake Forest and then UCF, and finally Briarcliff University, an NAIA program in Iowa. He eventually settled home and started his family with Quinnett. Steph started playing high-level AAU basketball in third grade with star prospects like Isaiah Collier, top recruit in 2023 class now at USC, Robert Dillingham from Kentucky, and Bronny James. Competition allowed Stacey to gauge the potential of his son, who had big feet, learn how to play without speed and athleticism. As he got into middle school, Steph was walking up for speed and agility drills with his dad at 5:30 a.m., and they would work out again after classes were over. He was running hills and jumping rope and doing 100 push-ups per day, all of which bore fruit in the form of highlight reel dunks and physically dominating defense on the opponent's best player. Those things were taking place in fifth grade, Stacey said, and it wasn't a thing where I had to go and wake him up each morning. Stacey started coaching Steph's AAU team when he was in sixth grade. During that time, he kind of transitioned less as a dad, more as a coach, Steph said. He coached me just as hard as anybody else on the team. So to know that I had that in my corner and then my dad as a supporter on the back end, that was something that I asked for and I wanted, literally. There were a number of AAU teams that reached out after that sixth grade year, trying to get Steph to come play for them. Stacey recognized how hard he was on his son, entertained the idea, and left the choice up to him. He asked me, "Why won't you coach me again?" Stacey said, and I knew right then that he wasn't going to run from coaching, that he was going to be fine. That was the big turning point for him. I'll stop that article there, and I will read this. Fairfield men's basketball missed out on the NCAA tournament after a heartbreaking loss in the MAAC championship game to St. Peter's, but unlike the Peacocks, who were summarily bounced in round one by Tennessee, the Stags are still playing. Fairfield outlasted Little Rock 82-75 in a first round of the College Basketball Invitational in Daytona Beach, Florida on Sunday. They'll take on Chicago State, which upset UC San Diego in the quarterfinals on March 25th. Five players scored in double figures for Fairfield, 23-12, which outscored Little Rock 46-34 in the second half for a come-from-behind win. Ellington native and freshman guard Matt Curtis, who averaged 1.1 points in 4.4 minutes per game during the season, led the Stags with 19 points. Quinnipiac's men's basketball season came to an end as the Bobcats fell to Evansville in the College Basketball Invitational opener 64-63 on Sunday. The Bobcats, 24-10, fought back from a 10-point deficit with just over 6 minutes to go, but fell a point short. Senior forward Paul Otiento led the way with 16 points and 7 rebounds. Junior guard Doug Young added 12 points. Kenny Strawbridge Jr. and Gage Bobe led the way for Evansville with 11 points each. The Purple Aces will face Seattle in the next round of the CBI on Monday. Despite losing its final two games, Quinnipiac will still remember 2023-24 as a banner season. The Bobcats set a Division I program record for wins, captured their first ever regular season MAC title, and had the Conference Coach of the Year in Tom Bacora and Player of the Year in Matt Belang. Now back to the NCAA. Ty Kolek, pitcher, had 21 points and 11 assists, and David Joplin made two free throws with 7.4 seconds left to help Marquette finally put away Colorado 81-77 on Sunday in the second round of the NCAA tournament. In their third season under Coach Shaka Smart, the second-seeded Golden Eagles reached the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2013 by outlasting the 10th-seeded Buffaloes and their dynamic offense. Marquette will face number 11 North Carolina State in a South Regional semifinal on Friday in Dallas. Zach Edey had 23 points and 14 rebounds. The number one seed Purdue cruised into the Sweet 16 by pounding eighth-seeded Utah State 106-67 with an impressive offensive performance on Sunday. Purdue also set a school record for most points in a March Madness game. Next up is fifth-seeded Gonzaga in the Midwest Region semifinals in Detroit. Trey Kaufman Wren added 18 points and 8 boards for Purdue, who ended up 31-7, which broke the school's single-season record for victories. Fletcher Lawyer had 15 points, and Braden Smith had all 6 of his assists in the second half when the Boilermakers shot 65.2% from the field before pulling the starter. And now over to UConn women. Before the UConn women's basketball team took the court for its first NCAA round tournament game against 14-seed Jackson State, senior forward Alaya Edwards requested an unusual addition to the pregame routine. "We were waiting for the coaches to come in before we run out for warm-ups, and Alaya was like, 'Can we get a group hug?'" Redshirt freshman Ice Brady said. "Everyone was like, 'Huh?' Because we don't do that. But then it hit me, and I'm very emotional. And I was like, 'Dang, this is really our last run with Alaya and Nika.' But no one else was crying, and I didn't want to be the only one, so I held in my tears." The 3-seed Huskies face 6-seed Syracuse in the second round on Monday. It'll be 6 p.m. on ESPN for their final game at Gamble Pavilion this season. It will also be the last ever home game for Edwards and fellow senior Nika Mule, who both announced they will move on to professional basketball next season. Monday's matchup gives both Mule and Edwards one more chance to hit career milestones in front of the adoring crowd and stores. Mule is a single pass away from tying Mariah Jefferson's school record 659 career assists from 2012 to 2016. And Edwards needs 12 more rebounds to surpass 1,000. She's averaging a career-high 9.4 boards per game in 2023-24 and has logged at least 10 in 7 of the Huskies' last 10 games. "I'm sure that's going to be a full circle, full moment story. Whoever gets the points," Mule said of her impending record-breaking assists. "Alaya was my first at UConn, so I'm sure she's going to be eager to get this one too. But I don't care. If it's one of the freshmen, that would be so cool. If it's one of my fellow seniors that have been here for 4 years, that's going to be cool. If I pass it to Coach out of bounds and he shoots it and makes it, maybe that would even be cooler." Well, star guard Paige Beckers and fifth-year forward Aubrey Griffin will be back in 2024-25 for another year of eligibility. The whole team feels the pressure to send Mule and Edwards out of Gamble on a positive note. Nearly every minute of playing time for UConn is going to be a freshman outside of the 3 senior starters, and Brady struggle to even articulate how impactful their leadership is on the underclassmen. "We rely on them like more than 100% of the time," Brady said, laughing. "They do a great job of just keeping all of us under control. If things start to get out of whack, they're the ones that bring us all in, check us, and make sure we're all on the same page. Our seniors, they're everything to us." The game will still carry a bittersweet twinge for Beckers as she attempts to savor these final experiences in a UConn jersey with her departing classmates, but the Husky superstar has made playing with joy her priority in the postseason. Monday is just another opportunity to enjoy the March Madness atmosphere that she didn't get to experience while sidelined with a torn ACL last year. "I'm just trying to embrace it, have fun, play with a joy that's contagious, and not just on the court, but to everybody in the stands as well," Becker said. "At the beginning of the Big East tournament, I just told myself to have fun. I play so much better when I'm playing with joy and not thinking about the pressures that come with playing at UConn and being expected to win every game no matter who's on the floor. UConn has advanced to at least the Sweet 16 in every NCAA tournament since 1993, but Syracuse could prove a challenging matchup for the Huskies even on their home court. The Orange are anchored by star shooter Deasia Fair, who could surpass Missouri State's Jackie Stiles for the fourth most career points in NCAA history. Fair, a third-team AP All-American, averages 22.3 points per game. The Huskies have lost just one game this season at Campbell Pavilion, 82-65 to Notre Dame on January 27th. Syracuse was the only opponent to sweep the two-seed in ACC play, most recently beating the Irish 79-65 in South Bend 2 days before they faced the Huskies. Orama tried to sign Orange coach Felicia Leggett-Jack as a player when he was an assistant coach at Virginia, so he's fully aware of how capable her team will be. Nothing about what's happened at Syracuse is remotely surprising. I tried really, really hard to get Felicia that job before, and they finally realized the obvious thing for them to do. Orama said, the way they play, the way she coaches them, how successful they've been in a short period of time, these are the same exact things she did at the University of Buffalo. I recruited her out of high school when I was at UVA, and I've been a fan of hers from back then. So, yeah, when I saw they were in our bracket, I wasn't too pleased. At the end of the third quarter in the first-round NCAA tournament game against Arizona Saturday night, Syracuse's fifth-year guard, Deasia Fair, went down hard and had to be helped off the court. Then she came back and scored 13 of her 32 points in the fourth to lead Syracuse to a 74-69 win. Fair, who said she had twisted her knee, then fell and landed on it, said she was fine on Sunday ahead of Syracuse's second-round NCAA tournament game against UConn at Campbell Pavilion. The 5'5" guard has been one of the country's most prolific scorers over her career at Syracuse 2 years and Buffalo 3 years. She currently sits at fifth place in the all-time NCAA scoring ranks with 3,383 points, 10 behind Jackie Stiles, 3,393, 19 behind third place Kelsey Mitchell of Ohio State, 3,402. She has 111 three-pointers this season, trailing only Iowa's Caitlin Clark, who has 171. She averages 22 points per game, but her fourth quarter scoring in big games has been what has set her apart this season. Twice in regular season wins over Notre Dame, Fair came up big in the fourth quarter Saturday. She scored 11 straight points in the fourth to rally her team past Arizona. We love it, her teammate Kennedy Perkins said. We know when she's cooking, give her the ball. We'll rebound. We'll get her open if we need to. But when Deasia gets going, who can stop her? UConn coach Gino Auriemma wasn't sure his team will be able to. She's going to go off, Auriemma said. She's going to score a lot of points. That's what she does. She's really good at it. I don't know you're going to be able to go. They make sure she gets 10 tonight. It will be more like, can we keep her under 20? That would be a great accomplishment. Sometimes one player can be dominant, and she is. I think she is that dominant, and I don't think one player on our team is going to be able to do it by herself. Referencing other games this season where UConn has struggled against high-scoring guards, he said these games, except for NC State, the struggle for us was as much offensively as defensively, even when guards get 30-something, as Notre Dame's Hannah Hidalgo did. The score was 60-60 going into the fourth quarter, and we fell apart defensively. I don't know how you can just go out and take somebody out of the game, and that's that good. On the other end, you've got to score and continue to score the entire game. We know she's going to score, and we hope we're going to score. Fair said her game is hard to stop because sometimes she doesn't even know what she's going to do next. The type of player I am, you don't know what you're going to get when you don't know what decision I'm going to make. She said, I'm kind of hard for teams to score that defensively. I think it's because you just really never know. You don't know if I'm going to shoot the ball. You don't know if I'm going to make a pass. You don't know if I'm going to go by or try to get by. Just, you never know. And I say that because I never know myself. I just go with the flow. Arizona coach Adia Barnes knew exactly what Fair would bring Saturday night and was hard-pressed to stop her in the Wildcats' loss. She's really good, She's really hard to guard, Barnes said. That was a big concern coming in, and she just really took over the game. Fair loves the fourth quarter. Go time, she called it Saturday night. She said she feels like her conditioning level is unmatched. The mindset I have going into the fourth is that it's the last 10 minutes of the game. It's either do or don't, Fair said. I feel like overall our conditioning as a unit is unmatched. We're able to sustain a full 40-minute game. If you ask me, we're able to sustain even more if we have to. Fourth quarter is normally the hardest, but I feel like for me it's the easiest. Guarding Fair won't be one player's responsibility, but team defense will be important, UConn senior guard Nika Mule said. We have a lot of respect for the whole team, and especially for her, Mule said. She's their leader. She's going to have the ball most of the time. But I feel like through my 4 years here, we faced a lot of teams like that that are very guard dominant, and they have that one player with the ball, and it's going to go, and everybody's going to go look at her. It's going to come down to team defense and rebounding. A lot of it has to do with them not getting those second shots, and it's not just on our big guys to do that. It's on our guards to box out and help them too. Just a little more notes here on this game tonight. As I said, it'll be at Campbell Pavilion. Time 6 p.m. UConn leads the series 40-12. The last meeting, UConn won 83-47 in March of 2021. That was in San Antonio, Texas. And I'll mention again the records: 3-seed UConn 30-5, 18-0 in the Big East; 6-seed Syracuse 24-7, 13-5 in the ACC. And let's see what else we have. I guess we'll get into baseball now for as little time that we have. Shohei Ohtani plans to speak to the media Monday for the first time since the illegal gambling and theft allegations involving the Angeles star and his interpreter emerged during the team's trip to Korea. The interpreter, E.P. Mizuhara, was fired by the Dodgers last week when the team opened the season with two games against the San Diego Padres in Seoul. Manager Dave Roberts endorsed Ohtani addressing the matter publicly. It's the right thing to do, he said. I'm happy he's going to speak and speak to what he knows and give his thoughts on the whole situation. I think it will give us all a little bit more clarity. Ohtani made only a brief appearance in the Dodgers clubhouse before Sunday's freeway series opener against his former team, the Angels. Teams are playing three exhibition games before the Dodgers host the Cardinals in their home opener on Tuesday. And we will continue with baseball. The Yankees have settled on a fifth starter. Aaron Boone, speaking to reporters before the team's exhibition series in Mexico City, said it will be Luis Gil. The Yankees had an opening in the rotation after losing Gerrit Cole to elbow inflammation, and the competition whittled down to Gil and pitching prospect Will Warren. While both have fans in the organization, Gil has the advantage of major league experience and being on the 40-man roster. But the 25-year-old earned the opportunity, recording a 2.87 ERA with 23 strikeouts and 6 walks over 15 and two-thirds innings this spring in his unofficial return from Tommy John surgery. That included a sensational March 11th performance in which Gil struck out 8 Phillies over 3 2/3 innings. He's electric, plus heater. I think he had a pretty dominant spring. He was running through some really good lineups all spring. That shows you the explosiveness of that heater, said rotation mate Marcus Stroman, who connected with Gil over Instagram years ago. So to see him in the rotation is healthy, and it's awesome. That included a sensational March 11th performance in which Gil struck out 8 Phillies over 3 2/3 innings. He's electric, plus heater. I think he had a pretty good dominant spring. He was running through some really good lineups. That's a repeat of a paragraph that I read. So I'm going to continue. We made it a point to work on that pitch, Gil said, of his champion changeup on March 16th. If you remember going back to when I debuted, it was really a two-pitch pitcher. It was important for me to work on the third pitch. I wanted to really get it to a spot where I felt comfortable using it, and now we're able to use it. Gil enjoyed a promising cup of Major League Coffee in 2021, recording a 3.07 ERA and 38 strikeouts over 29 in the third innings and six starts. He didn't surrender a run over his first 18 and two-thirds frames, the longest scoreless streak to begin a career in Yankees history. That surpassed slow Joe Doyle's career opening stretch of 18 innings, which he logged way back in 1906. Gill also became the first pitcher since 1893 to throw at least 4 2/3 scoreless innings in each of his first three career appearances. However, Gill underwent surgery in May 2022. He's pitched in just 9 official games and 1 major league contest since the start of 2022. With that in mind, the Yankees will be careful with his workload. However, the team doesn't plan on holding the righty to a strict innings limit. It's no hard number, Blake said, now being realistic about maybe what to expect from this guy. He just hasn't pitched competitively, really, for the last 2 years in any meaningful way from a build-up standpoint, so you're not necessarily expecting him to go 180 innings, but at the same time, you're not saying he can't go 180 innings. It's more like, let's just take it one start at a time, 1 month at a time, and just see how he's responding, what the metrics look like in between outings, and kind of keep building as we go. Blake added that the Yankees will pay attention to Gill's pitch metrics and profiles, biochemics, velocity, and recovery. They can test his strength and other related measurements in the weight room, too. It's somewhat art, somewhat science, but we have a lot more objective metrics to kind of lean on than an innings count to say a guy's trending in a positive or negative direction, Blake continued. While Gill will open the season as the Yankees' fifth starter, that doesn't necessarily mean he will be on the opening day roster. He won't be needed until the start of a road series in Arizona on April 1st, so the Yankees can use his eventual roster spot for an extra reliever. They could also use it to delay the departure of a player who was out of minor league options, such as catcher Ben Wartville, but one of those bullpen spots could have gone to Warren. The Yankees have said that they view the 24-year-old as a starter. The team's reassigned the prospect to minor league camp on Sunday. However, Blake didn't rule out the possibility of Warren pitching in relief at some point. And we'll tell you what's on the air today. Wrapping up the baseball spring training games, 4 p.m., St. Louis versus Chicago Cubs on MLB, and 8 p.m., spring training, Boston at Texas. They'll be playing down at Texas in their home stadium. That'll be on NESN on MLB Network. And it's also going to be on Radio 1080 WTIC. In the NBA, 7:30 p.m., Boston at Atlanta on the NBC Network, also NBA TV. 7:30 p.m., Detroit at New York, MSG. 7:30 p.m., Brooklyn at Toronto on YES. 10 p.m., Philadelphia at Sacramento. That's on the NBA TV Network. And at 8 p.m., hockey. 8 p.m., Vegas at St. Louis. And that is on the NHL Network. And just one more note on golf before we sign off. Jesper Svensson won his first European Tour event on Sunday after beating Kirstek Appelbarnet in a playoff at the Singapore Classic. The Swedish player shot a 9-under par 63 in the final round to match the course record, one better than his Thai opponent, with both finishing on 17 under 271 overall to force the playoffs. And we have an NBA note. Zion Williamson scored 36 points and led the Pelicans to a 114-101 victory over the shorthanded Pistons on Sunday. Williamson shot 13 for 14 from the floor and 10 for 14 from the line in 36 minutes. He added 7 rebounds and 6 assists and received applause from the crowd at Little Caesars Arena when he left the game. And that will do it. A lot of sports, obviously, mostly basketball. We'd like to wish you a very pleasant day. Enjoy the UConn women tonight. Should be a good game against Syracuse up at Campbell. And we will see you down the road. So long for now.